tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, baby.
I think my favorite thing about this show is the sweet, sweet jams that we get to play at the beginning of every episode.
Yeah.
Exactly. Bringing the funk, getting it started. Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guardians of the Galaxy after show here on AfterBuzz TV. Today we are talking about two episodes because we were off last week, so we'll be catching up with episode 9, We Are Family, and episode 10, Bad Moon Rising.
Which is an awesome episode title.
It is an awesome
episode
title.
That's my favorite so far.
I agree. I totally agree with you, though I think overall I might have liked We Are Family a little bit better.
The episode We Are Family was definitely better.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The title...
Bad
I was
Moon
more
Rising.
Excited for Bad Moon Rising off the title.
Completely agree with you on that. We'll get more into that in just a moment here. But if you guys have not done so already, please be sure to go on over to iTunes, subscribe, leave reviews, let us know how we're doing. Also, if you're listening on iTunes, remember you can always head over to YouTube as well and listen to our voices as well as seeing our beautiful faces and sweet, sweet dance moves during
Absolutely.
Our intro music.
What could be better?
Exactly. And if you are on YouTube right now, we are following along with that live chat as well as the hashtag on Twitter, ABTVGOTG, because here at AfterBuzz TV, especially when it comes to cartoons, we love our alphabet soup. I am your host, Emma Fife. I can be found all over the internet at Emma Fife, and I am joined by a wonderful panel of one and wonderful engineer as well. On the panel today, we have Taylor Bolt.
Yes, hi guys. It's good to be back for, this is my second and third episode.
Exactly.
With
it's all
of
just,
the
we're just throwing you right
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. You can find me on the Twitter at Taybolt, that's at TAYBOLDT, or on the Instagram at Taybolt, also BOLDT.
And in the booth, we have the wonderful Alexis Torres.
Hey, everybody. I'm here. I'm ready to talk about how awesome these episodes are. And you can find me all over social media at atorres890.
And before we get into the episode, I want to say happy birthday to Renji 90998, who joins us in the chat almost every single week.
Happy birthday, Renji.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Renji. We're so happy that you are sharing your birthday with us here on the internet. It's amazing that like we're not in the same state. I don't know where you live, Renji, but it's really cool that like through the power of the internet
yeah, that
we can
is
all
awesome.
Connect and
with our powers combined. With our
celebrate
wish you a
birthday.
Happy birthday.
Exactly. So thanks for joining us and happy birthday, Renji. So, what did we think? Let's start with the overall impressions of both of the episodes, and then we'll kind of get more into what each of the individual ones was about. Overall, thoughts, feelings?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I was much more excited for Bad Moon Rising, mm-hmm. I think, than I was for We Are Family, just because I didn't really know what to expect with We Are Family.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be more about, like, the Guardians being like, oh, we're a family
now,
we're together, we got each other's back. And actually, Bad Moon Rising ended up being
more like that
episode. And We Are Family was all about Rocket, which is awesome.
I totally agree. We Are Family, just based on the title, sounded like it was going to be kind of like a cheesy.
I was expecting cheese.
Oh, we're going to get together and love each other. But ultimately, it was sad.
Yeah.
But in a really good, it's so
it
strange
was real.
To say. It's yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Real,
like sad in a good way, meaning that you know the way that episode ended was the way that it needed to end.
Yeah,
even though it wasn't necessarily the happiest ending for Rocket,
it really wasn't. And he kind of took it. I thought he took it.
Yeah.
In stride. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like it could have been a lot more traumatizing than it was.
Yeah, totally.
He seemed okay. He seemed like he had ended up sort of at the place that he began. Mm-hmm. At emotionally, which is rough, but
he kind of went full circle in that episode.
He really did.
Yeah.
But he got to talk to his family
it's
a
true.
Little bit.
It's
That's
true.
Nice, I guess.
Alexis, your overall impressions.
So So I'm really happy that we finally got a Rocket episode where, I mean, because we had several times where Rocket, well, not several times, but we had one other time where Rocket was pretty emotional about.
Right.
Yes.
Well, last episode, he
exactly.
was, had, yeah, we had a pretty good Rocket episode.
The fact
episode.
That we actually got to, one, see his family, two, go through just the motions. I loved that his whole family was kind of exactly like him. And I loved just seeing that whole side. I think that selfie really got to me after watching that. I was like, oh,
seriously. Yeah.
Also, I want hologram selfies.
I know.
Come on, Apple.
Come on. Get it.
They were kind of like, ultimately, it was almost like having it's like a new school locket. Almost,
right.
But it was like contained in their wrist somehow,
like,
as far
3D.
As I could tell. Yeah, but it was like a 3D hologram, just like you would keep a photo of your family in a locket around your neck, like back in the day. I feel like that's kind of
exactly.
The more advanced version of it is what we're seeing in Guardians
like
of
Rocket,
the Galaxy
Rocket
here.
And Drax. The,
yeah, yeah.
A wonderful family photo.
Just to address Stardrew in the chat. So we're talking about two episodes today. For anybody who missed the intro, we're talking two episodes today, 9 and 10. And 10 is the one where Ronan the Accuser comes back. So
that is so crazy. Sorry,
spoiler.
I know we're not into that episode yet, but holy
crap. Like,
that's
a big deal.
That was so ridiculous.
I was not expecting that either, and I'm actually not sure how I feel about it. So we'll get more into that as we get into that episode. But since, you know, we're already on the topic of We Are Family, which was episode 9, let's get a little bit more into that. Because as I was saying, I went into this episode thinking it was going to be this kind of cheesy, We Are Family to me sort of implied that it was going to be an episode of the Guardians being like, we're totally a misfit family of friends.
Right. Like
me
it was somehow
too.
Just nuclear, like about them. No, I mean, we found out pretty early on. Well, I mean, we did have like that awesome sort of fight scene.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Immediately I was like, uh-oh, because you see these robots come back that were, you immediately recognize them as the robots that had Rocket and Groot held captive.
Right, right.
And so I was like, this is not going to end well. Yeah. And then they caught them, and I was like, oh, of course.
Which
that was going to happen.
Did anybody else think that these robots looked like super tricked out versions of the droids in, like, Attack of the Clones and in the Star Wars prequels?
Yeah.
I had two things.
Okay.
One where I was like, Star Wars prequels?
Yeah.
I was like, GLaDOS is now taking over. If you haven't played Portal, but that's what I was thinking. I was like, GLaDOS is now.
It was a little GLaDOS-esque. Yeah, no, totally.
I had these as a kid. I remember having these, like, I'm pretty sure it was a cheap knockoff of Transformers toys, but that looked a lot like these robots where they were like, it was like, it wasn't like I'm a car. It was like, I'm this weird metal box that turns into a robot.
Right, they're like a cube that evolves into a robot.
It reminded me of those.
Yeah. The robots themselves were like pretty creepy, I thought, especially because they gave them those like calm female voices,
right?
Which always is like umbrella facility in Resident Evil 2.
Yeah,
like
that's
the facility
that
will self destruct in X number of minutes.
Yeah,
choose to accept.
But
what I got from that, which I did not get initially, because watching like the Rocket and Groot origin stories,
right?
I did not understand that it's like an AI. They're completely autonomous, I think. And that was when, like, I made that realization during this episode.
Right.
This is like an intelligent species in a way.
Artificial
species that just tests on animals and stuff. Like, that is creepy.
It is.
It gave it a much dark, I mean, it was dark to begin with from the origins, because it's like, this poor raccoon.
Exactly,
and
was experimented
family.
On. Because, I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, though Rocket denies that he is a raccoon. He doesn't understand what a raccoon is. We, as the audience, know that that's exactly what he is.
He's a raccoon. He's an awesome, trigger-happy, crazy raccoon.
Yeah. Yep. There ain't no thing like me but me. That's what he keeps saying. Because, you know, he basically is addressing with Drax at the beginning of the episode, being like, Drax, you gotta, like, this whole thing, like, my family, like, you just gotta let that go.
Right.
I lost my family, too, but, like, you don't see me whining about it. And ultimately,
and you don't, actually.
No, you really don't.
At no point did he really whine about it. I think that if he whined at all, so his mother ended up being
his mom
sort of
a
unbearable.
Great character. She was great.
I was just like, oh, come on, like, show some love, please. Like, Rocket, it's fitting.
Yeah.
I'll give him that. Like, knowing Rocket as a character.
Oh, no. I
totally understand and think that it's justified.
Yeah.
But as an audience member, I'm like, show a little love, guys.
Yeah.
Come come on.
No, it explains exactly where Rocket's from, where he got it from. That's why I said they're practically all the same at that point.
Exactly. Yeah.
Certain personality.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that because, you know, it's something that we've talked about on the show that's gotten leaps and bounds better over the course of the past few episodes, this episode included, that, you know, we've seen a lot of evolution in Rocket in terms of his character. He's not just grumpy and angry and fighting with Star-Lord all the time, but it was
though
cool.
He is that too,
but there's more of a purpose to it. It's not just for like lame comedy anymore.
Right. He's really grown. It's really nice to see, especially like having two episodes back to back where we really get to explore him. I wonder if the creators were just sort of like, this is the character that we just need to expound more upon, and they did it so nicely at just the right time in the season.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Just when he started to get interesting.
Yeah.
And now I think Rocket's my favorite character now, which
I don't know
if I could say that before. I definitely,
three episodes ago could not have said that. I would have absolutely said Drax hands down.
Yeah.
And Drax is still definitely up there for me.
Oh, he's still a great character.
But yeah, I mean, Rocket has seen some really, really nice character development. It was really cool in this episode to see his family all exhibit those same basic grumpy traits that are so prevalent
exactly.
in Rocket.
And I have to say, I just actually went back home to, I'm from Tennessee for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And when you drive around Tennessee, you see some raccoons every once in a while. And now for some reason, I think that every raccoon has a Rocket-like personality, like buried beneath them. Like if I gave you sentience, the ability to speak, you would be a little Rocket.
Yeah, you would just,
and it gives,
just be angry
it, I
all the
say,
time.
It gives raccoons a lot more depth.
And to raccoons
when you
in general.
Think of them
I
that
would
way.
Just be
yeah.
really scared if I saw you running around Tennessee trying to, like, give a raccoon, like, a rocket.
Oh, no.
Like,
yeah.
I'd be like, Taylor, no.
I still kept my distance, for
don't
sure.
Don't give those raccoons guns.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would feel safe around Rocket the character, even, just because he's a little bit of a live wire.
He's definitely a little bit volatile.
For sure.
Great word, Emma.
Yes.
That's really good. Way to describe Rocket.
Yeah. So basically we find out that on the half world, this planet that they're on, that these sentient robotic life forms are using these crystals, which are somehow related to the cosmic seed.
Right. So I feel like there's a little bit that wasn't really explained here.
I agree, and I think intentionally not fully explained.
Sure. It's to keep the mystery up.
Yeah.
But we gather that there's some sort of mining operation that they had. But this isn't the planet that they're from. The Guardians go to this random planet where the cosmic seed energy is coming from, and they find this abandoned mining operation for these crystals.
Mm-hmm.
But we learn somehow that, these sentient robots that captured Rocket and Groot earlier are the ones that had this mining operation.
Yes.
It seemed a little, that's a little like convenient, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have liked to have seen more of the ruin of the mining operation, especially since they accuse, it seems like they accuse the Guardians, or at least Rocket, of destroying or undermining those mining operations.
Their operation, yeah,
I agree. So like that just happened. Right? Like, that would have had to have just happened.
Yeah, that was my understanding of it. Yeah, and because I mean, later in the episode when they go back to the robots to be like, hey, you can de-evolve, right? You have that ability. And they're like, yeah, but we need some of that crystal, and you ruined everything. We don't have any of it now. But, you know, Groot had, of course, hidden a little shard of it in his hand.
I also saw some more of those crystals lying around on that planet, and they only needed, like, part of one. Like,
right,
they only needed
to create
one
that
crystal.
Thank you for bringing that up, because in my brain I was like, there were so many crystals on the floor.
Yeah, just pick
someone
one of those up.
A piece, a tiny little bit of it.
Well, I was going to say,
they just need someone with arms to do it.
I think the idea was that the highly evolved animal uprising had taken all of the crystals.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And I think that they were the ones who had undermined the mining operation because, you know, they had taken over the lab, and it was, you know, in some ways they were kind of running the show, and the robots were almost refugees on their own planet.
Yeah,
in a way.
They were losing.
Yeah,
like, they were in dire straits by the time somehow they had the resources to go capture Rocket and Groot.
Yeah,
though not pick up a crystal, but capture Rocket and Groot at least. Which, like, good for them on that. But I would have liked. I love the episode.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
this is one of my favorites
really
so
this
far.
One too.
But I would have loved to have seen either some remnants of the mining thing, or just like maybe it justifies that these animals did destroy this. And we saw, like, some sort of clue that they had been there. Not even, like, if we don't see them, maybe, like, like we see something weird, like a walrus tusk or something that's just a little footprint.
Yeah, or
we were just like, what is
claw
that?
Claw marks. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm being nitpicky because
it was definitely it was a really good episode. And the thing that I really liked about this episode was that it's a theme that I really enjoy, which is that idea of there were two really of like, when does evolution go too far?
Right.
Because basically, you know, they're using these crystals to rapidly evolve these animals into essentially a more highly intelligent state where they are capable of speech and right. more advanced motor skills and governing a society, so to speak.
Yes.
But the other thing that it was about was, you know, these animals who had been cruelly experimented on, then turning on their experimentors. And it's the idea of, is that just as bad? That it's kind it's, of the, it's that like revenge
animal,
plot.
It's Animal Farm-esque. Yeah, it's yeah. like these animals take over, and then all of a sudden, the revenge that they're exacting on the robots, it goes mm-hmm. a little too far.
Oh, exactly.
And we see that. Well, again, it's a little convoluted still, but I think Animal Farm is a really good analogy here. It's mm-hmm. like the pigs take over the farm, right? If you don't know Animal Farm, I'm sorry. But like, it's like there's all these animals on this farm. It's related to the communist revolution, but the pigs eventually like become farmers, like the animals revolt and the pigs become farmers, but it's like the turtle became the farmer in that sense, mm-hmm. but then continued to carry out these experiments on his other animal friends.
Right, right.
Because he wasn't about to turn himself into a giant snapping turtle, you know, but he's totally comfortable doing that to somebody else, turning Rocket's older brother. And it's kind of sad because I feel like a lot of those animals, I mean, they were fighting the robots, mm-hmm. but they had pretty good heads on their shoulders mm-hmm. for the most part. I mm-hmm. mean, they knew where to draw the line mm-hmm. and they wanted to make sure they were safe, mm-hmm. but I don't think they would have sort of driven that final blow home. I think it was really just the tortoise.
And did we know if they did this with other animals yet? If it was just, this is like the first like trial run?
My understanding in terms of the like crazy Hulk evolution.
Which happens a lot in the show.
It's, yeah, it's true.
I mean, it is Marvel, but I'm like, come on, guys.
Yeah, but my feeling was that this was the first time that they had ever forced a creature to Hulk out, basically.
Yes. Right, yeah.
Which they did to Rocket's older brother.
So no one had any of these crystals.
No.
Why didn't they pick up a crystal when they went to this moon and undermine that? Well, maybe it wasn't them, I guess, because they don't ever say explicitly that they stopped the mining
That's
operation.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
You just need
that.
One little piece of crystal, guys. Just pick it up just in case. One. It
yeah.
looks cool.
Well, I mean,
just as a souvenir.
I was going to say, I mean, the animals who've taken over the lab are using the crystals to mm-hmm. do the more accelerated evolution.
Okay, right.
But apparently these crystals work both ways because, you know, the idea was that, you know, there was this sentient group of robots who were evolving these animals, and they were, and they even by their own admission said, yeah, you know, our first go arounds, they were sloppy. They were not good. We did bad things.
Right. Yeah.
And we took it too far.
It was nice to see robots with a conscience.
It was, yeah.
Just because if you're the least bit afraid of like the eventual robot uprising in the real world, then robots with a conscience is always sort of a good thing to see in advance.
Yeah. Well, and I just thought it was especially nice, you know, to see these sentient robots and to see these characters who were initially painted as the bad guys in this episode.
Right.
Because, first of all,
I love that turn. I love that.
Yeah.
Flip.
Well, yeah. Because, first of all, apparently, the rest of the Guardians did not know that Rocket and Groot came from a lab that they had been cruelly experimented
That's
on.
True. I feel like that would have come up in like one of their galaxy-wide car trips.
Though I did enjoy, though I did enjoy that interaction where Rocket's like, "Yeah, we came from this lab," and Star-Lord's like, never told me that. I think I would remember if you had told me something like
sure,
that."
Sure, that's true. Yeah, that was it.
So, but then to see, you know, because you know the robots come in and they recapture the. They recapture Rocket and Groot, and they're calling them, you know, by their experiment numbers, like subject 81P13, which was Rocket's number. And they're, because, you know, they set it up as, oh, they're going to capture them, they're going to take them back to the lab, they're going to do terrible things to them. And then that was not the case.
Yeah, that was not the – well, here's the thing. They do, like, hook them up to these weird little, like mm-hmm. – shock probe things. Mm-hmm. And what was the creepy thing that they kept repeating? Like, cease all defiant activity.
Yeah, something like that.
I'm like, oh, like, that just makes me want to rebel.
Oh, yeah. It was
like, even if I'm cooperating, that makes me want to go,
Rrr. Yeah, well, it was definitely a little robot uprising, to be sure. but then, you know, very, as the episode goes on, we come to learn that the robots are actually trying to undo some of their mistakes.
Right. Well, it's on the one hand, they're trying to save themselves.
This is true.
From the rebelling,
yes,
animals. Experiment.
Yes, from Animal Farm, yeah. On Half World.
Exactly. But the fact that they do admit to, I mean, we have these AI species, this AI life form that's willing to say, hey, we messed up. And we want to just undo this and stop. And we're going to protect – like that was the thing at the end when they were like, we're going to protect all of these animals.
Mm-hmm.
Did they say they were going to cease experimentation too?
Yeah,
they
said okay, that they, basically
– I would want that to be one of the qualifiers.
Oh, yeah.
Also.
Basically at the end of the episode, the robot species, their conclusion is, you know, we're going to have this planet full of just these regular animals now. And we're going to take care of them.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, their species found a new purpose, which I don't really know what it was before. Was it just
we're
going to evolve
know.
These animals?
Yeah, I'm really curious.
Though I think that is fascinating to have, now that I think about it, you have an artificial species that is driven by their interest in evolving biological
species. Actual biological life forms, yeah.
It's like they want to see what – like just like we're fascinated as a culture with technology and with AI or robotics or anything like that, they're fascinated with organic life forms.
Yeah.
And like it's, you know, it's like instead of the new iPhone came out, it's like,
right.
oh,
it's
the
like,
new raccoon
oh, look,
came
there's
out.
There's a new bunny rabbit today.
Exactly. We have a different bunny rabbit. Yeah. I think that's really actually a very cool sort of setup for that species.
It is. And it almost causes us to – like shine a mirror, look at ourselves in the mirror a little bit, where it's like, oh, we keep getting excited about new technology, and here we're seeing basically technology get excited about real life, which is ultimately...
That was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to steal
your
thunder
there.
No.
I'm so glad you brought it up, because I was sitting there going, oh my gosh, this is just like us. Oh, wow, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
I
so cool.
They can throw that in there. I mean, maybe kids might not be able to know that, but parents who are watching are kind of like, oh.
Oh, yep.
Okay. Yeah, no, I need to work on that.
And I think this show appeals to more than just kids. I mean, Disney XD has like that, has an interesting demographic.
They
it's
tend
like older-ish.
It's like young teenager more than kids,
but I
necessarily.
Think that most of the people that are going to be watching this show are very aware of like the world and they have opinions and stuff. I had opinions at like age 8, I feel like.
And to me, I feel like this episode was just – this to me was very reminiscent of the other kind of programming that we get on Disney XD that isn't afraid to go, as we mentioned earlier in terms of the end of this episode, kind of take the real approach to it.
Right. To be a little Animal Farm and then a little bittersweet at the end.
Yeah, it was definitely a little bittersweet at the end.
It's real. That's one of the first things I think we said is that it felt so real the whole time. So I admire that.
I was so delighted to be very emotionally affected by the ending of this episode.
I wasn't expecting for them to pull, like, tug on my heartstrings in this episode at all. I mean, I was happy that now that, I mean, we're not at the very end of this episode yet, but, like, I love how now Drax and Rocket now have a little hologram picture of their family.
I know.
Yeah.
It's so adorable.
Oh, that little selfie that Rocket took.
I was just tearing up. But no, I really liked how they were able to show that, like, hey, your you might, you know, I mean, Rocket's not a teenager, but, like, you know, for people who are watching, you know, your parents could, you know, cause problems and your siblings might drive you crazy, but you know deep down that if anything happened to them, you would miss them forever.
Right.
That family is family.
Yeah.
No matter what it is.
For those of you who maybe didn't watch the episode, hey, what's your deal? Go
watch the episode. But, why are you watching this?
But at the end, we see that not only are Rocket's family, which is his mother, his sister, and his older brother, but all of the other animals that were evolved revert back to their initial animal state.
You know what was really interesting, though, was that when Rocket initially, you know, came up with this plan to fire the de-evolution ray, because they only had one shot, and there were, at this point, you know, Rocket's brother and also Blackjack and Walrus, the other members of Ranger's sort of main crew,
yes.
they had all become like the Hulk versions of themselves.
Right. That was
and,
so
scary.
And
yeah, and so,
the walrus, the giant, like, I know, right? Muscly walrus.
Totally. I was horrified. I was just like, all right, seriously. Thinking of my nightmares.
And, and so, you know, Rocket couldn't choose just one of them to de-evolve. He had to get all of them somehow. And because they had that barricade around the planet that basically prevented any transmissions in or out, he was like, I can fire at the barricade and it'll go over the whole planet. Now, when Rocket did that, he was under the impression that he was going to de-evolve too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge decision to make because, I don't know, I mean, it's hard to relate it to, like, I don't know what you would connect that to, because it's a little far-fetched to say it's necessarily like a suicide sort of thing.
No, not
like suicide. Yeah, like martyrdom is a better word than suicide.
It is. You know what it honestly is you, I think of it this way. You are a superhero. You have this crazy amount of power and responsibility, and basically you're choosing to give it up. And in some ways, that would be nice, because then you could just go back to being normal.
Sure, there's that side of it too. That's interesting, because it's a burden to be the only one of your kind, you know, for both Groot and Rocket. I think that's why they're so tight, is because they both share that burden of there's nothing else in this universe
been
like
so
us.
So much together.
They have, really. Yeah.
That also helps. But I love how Rocket or Runt's mother just had that really touching moment at the end.
I'm glad they threw that in there, because had we gone that entire episode of her just being kind of like ornery,
crotchety,
and then if there wasn't some sort of redemption of like a mother loves all of her kids at the end, though, I was like, you could just say like I love you instead of being like I have to love you, because
I did like that she kept switching her favorite child throughout the course of the episode based on who was benefiting her the most at that moment.
Moms do that all the time.
They won't admit it.
They won't say
that. They do. But yeah. But it turns out that because of the way that Rocket and Groot were evolved, which was different from the way that the rest of these animals had been evolved using these crystals, the de-evolution ray didn't affect them.
Right. So was Groot evolved from – did they evolve Groot at all?
My understanding is that he absolutely was.
Okay.
They had also, you know, that if he'd been evolved using these crystals the way that the rest of these animals had been, Groot would have basically turned into a sapling.
Yeah. Because if you look at, like, the Groot origin things, he seems like he was – I kind of wish that there was more going on with that. But it seems like he's the same as he was before he was captured. I don't know if they knew what to do with him or not, which his species looks really fascinating. And, and he carries – like, we learn that he carries, like, this, like, seed or something. I forget what the world seed is.
I think that's what it was called.
Where you can, like – his species can come back into existence somehow eventually as long as – if I were Groot, I'd be literally – every time we got to a planet that had green stuff, I'd be like, let's try to bring –
let's revive the species, guys.
Exactly.
Let's
I'd be chopping off arms.
Here we go.
Yeah, why not?
See what happens.
But I'm excited for when that – because I hope that eventually that does happen at some point.
I agree.
But in the meantime, he's the only one, and Rocket's the only one.
And Rocket's the only one. It's sad. Yeah. But – you know, it, as you say, it's kind of, it's bittersweet.
Yeah.
Because they got to keep being amazing, and they didn't just go back to being
the basic
versions of themselves.
It would have totally changed the show if it was like the four guardians and like a raccoon on the ship traveling around the galaxy.
That would be so terrible. I would rather just be like, with your family, just go.
Yeah.
And I thought the way they paced out the de-evolution was really good, because you didn't know. Because, like, initially all the ones that had hulked out, they de-evolved back to their regular kind of talking animal form. Mm-hmm.
But Rocket starts glowing.
And then it just continued, and they were just all little woodland creatures again.
That felt so bad.
Poor Rocket.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, I'm not going to cry.
Oh, no. And I really hope that there was a body of water nearby for that walrus. That's what I was saying.
We know that there's water on the planet.
Nowhere to go. Okay, good.
Because, you know, we saw Gamora and Quill and Drax going down the river and the waterfall all that before they ended up coming back to come to Rocket and Groot's rescue.
Wait, no, that was on a different planet, though.
Was it?
Yeah, because they go to
–
they take them to a different planet.
That's right.
There's got to be a pond.
Because they take the ship. Yeah, exactly.
There's got to be a fountain or something.
They had to have gotten that walrus from somewhere in the first place.
Exactly.
Well, I'm thinking that it had to be inhabitable, because even though those animals were not their basic not instinct, but you know what I mean? Like, their basic thing.
Their natural habitat.
Their natural habitat. Yeah. But the thing is that they were still living on that planet together.
Sure.
So, obviously, at one point, they had to go get water.
This is true.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
But speaking of basic, in our next episode, the immaturity levels were quite basic.
They definitely were. Yeah, wow. Episode 10, as I say, I enjoyed episode 10. I just didn't like it as much as 9.
Yeah, it was a fine episode. And the title makes sense now, but I was expecting something
totally
wicked cool, Bad Moon Rising.
You know what it is?
It was nice.
I think that because, you know, we were off last week and my life is a little crazy. So I ended up watching these two episodes back to back over the weekend.
Yeah, I did too, actually.
And I think that if I had not watched the two back to back, I probably would have liked Bad Moon Rising
a
little bit better, because I still think that Bad Moon Rising overall is a lot better than many of the episodes we've seen earlier in the season. It's just that the three episodes right before it were so strong that it felt, and this is going to sound crazy to me because, you know, Ronan the Accuser comes back and it should be so exciting, but it felt a little lackluster.
I was kind of sitting there going, okay, so he's back.
Yeah, it had a much bigger impact, I think, on the story arc moving forward. But in the meantime, it almost felt kind of like some filler stuff was happening just to make that happen.
Yeah.
You know, to make Ronan the Accuser come back.
And I feel like we could have had Ronan disappear in this episode and I would have been okay with it.
I actually sort of thought he was gonna disappear again by the end.
I thought that he was gonna die again.
As soon as there was no, like, giant battle between Ronan, I was like, oh gosh, he's gonna stay, isn't he? And he did.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, so now we have a big bad, and we have to find the cut. Wait, what?
Right.
Yeah. You know what it is that I think that as an audience member, and based on stuff that we'd seen in the episode where Nebula came back, it almost felt like, oh, she's going to kind of take on the Ronin role with the universal weapon. And she totally did.
She did for a little
while. And then she brought him back, and now Ronan's just gonna be Ronan again. I mean, I don't know if people in the chat like agree with me, but I didn't need Ronan the Accuser to come back.
I don't think he's as interesting of a character. I don't think he has the depth that like Nebula has.
I agree.
Because she's connected to Gamora,
right?
And she's fighting for her own reasons.
Right.
And she's got something to prove.
Yes.
And she's like a little bit of an underdog in a way, just because she's been like sort of like
absolutely
a servant to Ronan. And then Ronan is just like this. He's just like this powerhouse of destruction, and it's a little bland. So I was kind of I was glad when he was gone.
Yeah.
I was like, good, okay, cool. We don't have to deal with that anymore. And now that he's back, it's like there could be some cool stuff that happens from that.
Yeah.
To me, whenever you do something like this, where you kill someone and bring them back, it kind of cheapens death.
I think that's what's bothering me about it too. And I also liked the battle that was going on between Korath and Nebula to basically be the next Ronin.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. It had drama, I don't know, and it built those two characters. Mm-hmm. And so now what do? They just go back to like, they kind of have to like devolve as characters.
I agree. I would have much preferred to just see Nebula try to carry on Ronan's legacy.
I agree.
It hurt my soul seeing that. I was like, it would have been really cool to see Nebula really step up and be like, you know, out of all the siblings, you know, you guys, you know, kind of strayed off the path, and now I'm the one who's trying to run everything.
Yeah.
And it just would have been really, like, it would have been nice to see, like, this bad A of a female character just, like, you know, villain just being like, hey, I'm here to rule everything. I don't need Ronan. I don't need you. I don't need anybody. I can do it. I don't need no villain. Like, I don't know.
I don't need no villain.
I think it would have been great just to have her just like that. And I'm not, like, upset that Ronan's back.
No, me neither. It's not completely ruining the show for me.
No.
I just think that we had this really cool dynamic and we had these two. I mean, obviously, you know, we'd seen Nebula before in the movie, but we had this new perspective on Korath and on Nebula, and they had the potential to be these two interesting villains that want some of the same things and a lot of different things. And now, and now I almost feel like Nebula is going to be demoted to henchman, unless there could be an interesting plot line of her realizing, oh, I didn't really want to bring Ronan back. We don't actually stand for the same things at all.
Yeah, I thought that maybe because he's not actually Ronan, he's the version of Ronan.
Yes, he's an earlier version of Ronan.
Oh, yeah, okay. I kind of regret doing that. No, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah,
that could be interesting moving forward, but... Mm-hmm. I don't know. In the meantime, it's like they have to step back, and it takes what it does to me as far as in relation to the Guardians is they have this interesting situation where they're fighting against these sort of pocketed resistance groups. It's like there's not one giant universal force against them.
Right.
They have
to,
like, they can deal with Nebula and they can sort of play her off other villains, and then now it's like, oh, it's Ronan again. Like Ronan is the bad guy once more. It helps in some ways, but if it ends up enriching Nebula's character line,
right,
I'm all for it.
Sure.
And if it doesn't, I didn't like it.
I agree with you. It's like, I'm not...
I second that.
I'm not thrilled about it right now, but it...
You never know what's going to happen.
I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. Exactly.
I feel like there's a plan, because I don't feel like that's something you do arbitrarily.
I hope so.
I don't know, guys.
So you never know. I think that the reason that it just makes me a little nervous that the focus is going to go so much back to being on Ronan, because... he was the villain that was established in the movie, which, you know, most people who are watching. And the series is, in its way, even though it's not part of the MCU, it is a sequel to the movie. What's your question,
Alexis?
That's
what I was saying. I was like, because we talked about, like, you, me, and Katie in the beginning, that we were like, okay, they said that it's supposedly supposed to be a sequel from the movie, but it's not supposed to be connected.
That
to
is correct.
The movie.
So basically, they expect, if you're watching this series, that you at least have a knowledge of what went down in the film.
Right.
However,
you probably saw the movie.
Exactly. Yeah. However, if you don't watch this series, that's not going to affect your enjoyment of future Guardians films, because this is not canon in the MCU. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, no, because I was really confused when he was like, do we have to do another dance battle? I'm like, wait a minute, wasn't that from the movie? Mm-hmm. I thought we weren't doing that. Now I'm just confused. So
there are little bits and pieces where they cross over.
So I didn't know completely, because they said they weren't going to do that. And then I'm like, well, now you're doing it. And now I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
So,
what did you guys think of the like previous versions of everybody that we saw on the planet?
Oh,
I mean, love Drax.
Actually, I brought it up specifically because Renji in the chat says it was funny how old Drax told Ronan that revenge was pointless when Drax is a 100% revenge-driven character.
Well, it was cool to see how everyone's changed.
Yes.
Gamora, like old Gamora, was just so one note.
Mm-hmm.
Just so like, I will serve Ronan the
Accuser. Yeah, she was Thanos' daughter.
And she's so much more interesting now. I think it was such a good change. And Drax, I think also now that he's fueled and sort of by revenge in a way, but he has that rational sort of basis for it. Like, I learned something about Drax from this episode.
I agree.
I
think that both Gamora and Drax, the previous versions of them, were really interesting to see and really enriched their characters.
Yeah.
Right. I think so, too.
I just love that you can tell a difference from Drax knowing that his family was alive to Drax losing everything that he loves. And he's only literally just the one note. I love that. Rocket was just like, I'm gonna gnaw everything.
He was a rabid raccoon.
Yeah, I was just like, okay. Well, I didn't
really understand what his deal
was. He was clumsy, apparently, when he was younger.
Clumsier when he was a little sapling.
A little sapling. He was just like, I'm learning how to do
things. I'm learning how to powers.
Yay, powers. Yeah. I don't know what's happening.
I'm learning how to superhero.
I think that was what was supposed to be going on
with
Groot. Yeah, that was
it.
Yeah,
he had the least interesting
Groot and Rocket were both a little silly. But I enjoyed Drax and Gamora especially. I liked, too, that we actually got to see, I think, a little of the change in thought process of Gamora's character when Nebula pushed her over the edge of the cliff with Quill, and he rescued her, and she's like, what is wrong with you? Why did you do that?
Why would you rescue me?
And he's like, because we're friends, and that's what friends do for each other.
It was fun and also kind of unnerving to see Quill like hold down an episode. Like, he was the crux point of the whole thing. And I was just like, how's this gonna go?
I know.
Because everyone else is sort of wild and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I fully get why he didn't have any sort of, like, he wasn't reverting at all. I guess it's his connection to the cosmos.
It's literally just poking at the fact that he's always immature.
Yeah, that he's sort of an immature. You know what? It's, so I also do the, the Ash versus Evil Dead after show. And one of the big things on that show, because, you know, it is a sequel to the Evil Dead films, is that the character of Ash Williams has not changed. He hasn't changed. He's just been, like, living in a trailer and not growing up, and he hasn't changed at all in the years between Evil Dead 2, because I don't have the rights to Army of Darkness, and now. So that, to me, is what was going on with Quill in this episode, was we're actually seeing that his, you know, kind of dumb immaturity and dumb luck is ultimately a strength for him.
Yeah, it's like he's sort of constant in a way. Like he's a rock somehow within the group, because he hasn't really evolved, I guess, in the same way that the other ones have. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying.
He's always been this way. He's always going to be this way.
He's always going to be this way.
Like, untouchable.
I mean, he has gone through turmoil. Like, right. He lost his mom and he got kidnapped and now, you know, and everything like that. But I feel like because of the fact that he's pretty much just kind of done his way this whole time, port with Drax and Gamora and I guess Groot and Rocket, they've all gone through things pretty late in life and then they had to just kind of adapt a little later. So with
Quill.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was like, Quinn? That's not correct.
No.
Quill.
I've almost called him Quinn so many times.
I'm like, oh, stop. With Quill, I feel like because it happened to him when he was so young, he was able to adult in his own fashion.
Yeah, well, and that he's just so, and again, you know, because we saw this in the very first episode when they were being, like, mind probed by those creatures, and you know, Gamora was having an emotional reaction to it, and Quill wasn't because he has no regrets.
Yep. Right.
Because he's literally just lived life the way he wants to live it, and how it's his rules, it's his way, the highway.
So. Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah,
that's
a
really good character point.
But I also enjoyed that, you know, so much of this episode was about how he was incredibly loyal to his friends.
Yeah, because, I mean, he could have just went, you know what, I can't change you guys. I don't know what's happening with this planet. I'm just going to go and figure it out. But he sat there and he's like, no, I want everybody to be on my team because we are a team. We're a mini family. We need to stick together and figure it out.
Yeah.
We are family. Again, this
I understand why it was called Dead Moon Rising because were on this dead moon.
Mandala, which I thought Mancala the whole time.
Like I thought it said Mancala. I was just playing that game
that's
yesterday.
So,
so this is interesting.
I love the voice work for the planet.
I did too.
I thought it was actually really funny. At first I was like, what am I going to think of this?
What's happening?
I was very confused because I was like, okay, so it's a 5-year-old, but with a Barry White voice? I'm still
kind of.
And it also sounds like there's a dude like on the other side of that mountain just yelling really loud. You know, there's no real sense of where the voice is coming from. It's just kind of there.
And it was interesting because, you know, in terms of the scope of the episode, there was almost a parallel between Mandala's journey and Quill's journey where Quill was, you know, he's very obstinate and is unaffected by Mandala because he already is kind of immature and silly. And you know, him saying like, oh, you know, your sort of purpose in life is to make everybody 5 years old again so we can all play. And at the end, we see Mandala decide that he doesn't want I'm calling it he because it had a man's voice.
We're gonna
refer to it as a he, even though it's a planetoid, so it's neither male nor female, really. Because he basically said, you know, I don't want to play anymore. I want to protect, and it was very much in the same vein of Quill immediately making that choice that he was gonna still protect his friends and figure out how to, because, you know, he was going to be there for them no matter what.
Yeah,
and I love how he chose. He's like, hey, there are times where you got to grow up and stop playing. I was like, hey, take your own advice.
Yeah.
Good on you, buddy.
Let's see if he takes that advice as we move forward in the series.
I feel like he should, because now I think the next few episodes, even though I think we have an episode next week, yes?
Yes.
That I feel like as the episodes progress, that I feel like he'll start to really put more of his emotional drive into it because he really wants to know, you know, where his upbringing came from. Why is he the only one that can open this box? Hopefully. Obviously, we're still going to get our very quirky, childish Quill, but I feel like as the episodes progress, we'll start to get a more mature Quill, I'm hoping.
I agree.
But only a little bit.
Just a sprinkle, guys.
And to be honest, in some ways, I think we did see a little sprinkling of that in this episode.
Because he kind of had to. It was sort of... It was on him, like, he had to figure out how to work with these people who were not cooperating, who weren't aware of the situation. Like, he was the only one who had the wherewithal in the situation to figure out how to solve it.
Is it weird that when I heard that their maturity levels were not all there or whatever, because it was an older version of these guys, that I wanted it to be kind of like the Justice League Unlimited episode where they were all children?
Yeah, like children.
Yeah, like Gamora's like a teenager or something. Or Drax as a baby. I think it would be so
funny. That would be awesome.
Funny.
I don't know if they've exhausted that episode idea. Yeah. I think there might still be room for something like that.
I think
it would
be really funny if Quill or Rocket and Groot had to deal with, like,
child. Like, legit child versions. I wonder if, you know, if Mandela had not come around and kind of stopped using that power, I wonder if, you know, they had continued to be under the influence of this planetoid, would they have continued to... revert?
I don't know. Like, go further back?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't know. It could have been a gradual thing. And they kind of went to the most recent previous versions of themselves.
Right.
So, I don't know.
And so, like, maybe it's just, like, set you back 5 years or something like that.
Yeah, something. Because the bad thing is I don't know what the sense of time is. It pretty much just seems like before they had a drastic change in their life, we had that version.
Yep.
So it's very interesting.
Mm. Yep.
So I have a question in this episode. First of all, what was exactly the process for bringing Ronan the Accuser back to life? Did we really understand
that? It had something to do with Mandela's ability to generate previous versions of people.
Yeah,
was it connected to the cosmic seed? Was it somehow?
Yeah, it was somehow connected to that because again, and you know, this is something that we touched on in predictions in a previous episode. That now we have fallen into this nice formula of. We follow the boombox, as Quill refers to the crypto cube, as to the cosmic seed. But basically, anywhere that the cosmic seed has previously been, it leaves traces of its energy. So that's why they keep ending up on all these planets, basically on a wild goose chase.
And it seems like they're getting stronger.
Yeah.
It seems like, first of all, I'm like, is this thing just like hyper jumping around?
Or
I wonder. I'm wondering what in the world is happening with this cosmic seed.
Well, because what we know about the cosmic seed is that it has the ability to speed up evolution, and it has some kind of regenerative powers, and it leaves traces of itself wherever it goes.
Right.
So
I want to see what the full power. I want to know what the full potential is.
Yeah,
like,
I totally agree.
I totally agree.
Yeah. I think that is a good place to dive into some predictions. Dancing that line as we speak.
Nice, especially since we were just talking about dancing too.
Yes, exactly. So dancing the line, predicting the future.
And now you're after Buzz TV.
This never gets old.
My show is the best.
It's really great. Yeah, so I mean, as I was saying earlier, I think that we've now fallen into this really good episode formula. So I'm thinking that, you know, because based on what we know about the Cosmic Seed already, we're going to see more episodes of here are the other effects that the Cosmic Seed has on things, and they're all going to be growth, life, rebirth kind of related.
Yeah, and maybe some negative effects too that are sort of related to like too much of that energy.
Well, we've already gotten some of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. I think what I've noticed is that it's sort of this exponential growth as they chase this thing and they get closer and closer behind its trail. It gets a little bit more out of hand. It seems like it's escalating the intensity of the things that they're finding in its wake. Like you go from like an abandoned mining facility in the last episode, and now this episode is like this planet can talk. Weird.
Exactly.
So I'm interested to see. I predict that they find it soon.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how much further it can go than planets alive.
Yeah. Living planets. That's.
Yeah. That's. giving life to a planet is pretty intense.
That is pretty intense.
So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how long it takes him to actually hunt this thing down. One of my favorite things in this episode was I finally, for the first time, got a hint of what the universal weapon is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what it does. I called it, I wrote down the universal joystick.
Yeah, that is basically the same thing.
Because he's like controlling this planet. But he can control this. I think he can wield it like no one else can.
Like a manual stick shift.
So then what I would also like to see is I would like to see the weapon end up back in Nebula's hands now that she has the opportunity to really see
how it works. It's been a hammer up until this point.
I know.
It's been a glorified hammer.
It really has.
And then I was like, oh, you can somehow move this planet. Okay. Yep. It's just gotten a lot cooler
for me.
I'm more interested in it than I ever have been.
I think she's going to use the universal weapon to destroy Ronan because she doesn't like the way he is.
I would like that.
I would like
that.
It's going
to be the best revenge
point when she
uses the hammer on him.
Yes.
Bring down the hammer.
That to me, that to me would be worth Ronan coming
back.
Right?
I totally agree.
And I don't think there's a whole lot that would make that worth it, like make Ronan's rebirth
worth it.
But that I would totally get behind that.
Me
way to bring him back and have Nebula grow like that and make that decision.
And while we're on the topic of revenge, before we wrap things up officially, I just want to share with you my favorite Drax quotes from each episode.
In episode 9,
it was, "I hate water. It cannot be trusted."
Yes, that water thing was so cool.
And in episode 10, this was when Quill was going to fight Nebula and Gamora said, "Oh, Quill, you're playing with fire." And Drax says, "No, Quill is playing with your sister, and she is not on fire, that we know of."
Oh, that we know of.
I can't remember which episode it was, but when he was trying to find Groot's spot or whatever, I can't remember what he used the phrase was, but it was so funny how he's like, tell me where the spot is, I will help you.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, Drax.
Yes.
You're adorable.
So, audience, I will leave you with anytime you come across a great Drax quote,
please tweet it at us using that hashtag
ABTVGOTG because we all love Drax and I think you guys
do. I think he's actually my favorite.
And he's got some great stuff to say and it should be immortalized on the internet.
I agree.
In the meantime, guys, thank you so much for watching. Taylor, where can the people find you?
Hi, people. You can find me on Twitter at Taybolt. That's T-A-Y-B-O-L-D-T or on Instagram at T-Bolt.
And Miss Alexis in the booth.
You can find me all over social media as atorres890.
And you can find me, Emma Fife, all over the internet at Emma Fife. My name, E-M-M-A-F-Y-F-F-E. If you're listening, those are all F's as in Fred, no S's as in snake. They tend to sound the same when you say them into a phone or a microphone and then have it transmitted into your ears. Thank you guys so much for joining us this week. We will be back again next week. We're looking at maybe a different time, so be sure to keep up with us on social media and we'll tweet it so you guys will know when to tune in live. For those of you who did tune in live, thank you again so much, and we will see you guys all again next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.